My name's John Anderson. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. Floyd has spent 2 days with me, and all he had to say, well, I just welcome John. I thought he was going to make this great big introduction. He's a nice man. He's handsome. He's bald-headed. He this, he that. But he didn't say that. It's such an honor to be here. If someone would have told me 23 years ago that a bunch of alcoholics could come up on a mountain and care for one another and share with one another and love one another and just have a great time without throwing each other off a mountain, I wouldn't believe it. I wouldn't believe it. But we all have come together, and I've really enjoyed this weekend so far. And I want to thank Debbie and her husband. And I'm jealous because one of these days, God going to give me a wife. And I might be 90 years old, shaking, walking down the aisle. But I admire y'all. Thank you for the talk, Debbie. Thank you, Frank. And Tamar, I forgot your name, but I'm sure you're going to make a great talk. I believe in giving people their flowers while they are alive. I tell my children, I tell my friend, don't wait till I am dead and buy all those flowers, spend all that money. I can't see them. I can't smell them. Let me know now that I'm doing a great job. And I believe in people to telling people that you all have done a great job. And I appreciate it. I've enjoyed the convention so far, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow. I don't know who was responsible for me being here, Bob or Milton or Roe or whoever, but I want to thank you for allowing me to come and share my experience, my thoughts, and my hope with you people. I have a lot of experience with alcohol. I've been there. I'm one of those chronic alcoholics. You know, I'm one of those ducks. I had a friend of mine say, if you walk like a duck, crack like a duck, wobble like a duck, you ain't no chicken, you're a duck. And after I get through talking, you'll say, he's a duck. And what experience I have, if I live, nothing happened, and make the July the 4th, I have 23 years of sobriety. And I hope and I pray that I said something to help somebody. If y'all ever notice, I know Bob heard me before, and Roe heard me before, and Milton heard me before. I sit down and I say a little prayer before I make my talk. And I ask God to put the words in my mouth, what he wants me to say. And sometime I make a talk and I'll be driving home and I say, why did I say that? You know, and that's God speaking through me. Because he knows what you all want to hear. He knows what you all need to hear. And basically my story is the same, but sometime I say a few different things and I don't even want to know why. Milton and I have corresponded back together on the phone, you know, and he told me what I need to do. He said, I don't want you to get up by cussing, and I want you to be presentable, put a suit on, and I don't want you down. I mess with those white women, you know. So I have one, Milton. I'm scared, man. I'm going to be on these mountains too far from home. But you know what? Most of all that I love about AA is the love that we have for one another. And without love, we have nothing. A great man once said, although I have the gifts of prophecy and although I can understand all mystery, and although I have so much faith that I can move mountains, but if I don't have love, I have nothing. And we have that love in AA that we can come and we can play and we can love each other and we can tell a few lies, but because they all in love. And I tell people all the time, enjoy your sobriety. I hate to see these people been sober 20 and 30 years and walk around, can't laugh, can't tell a joke, man. If you're not enjoying your sobriety, there's something wrong. You need to get with your sponsor and go to steps or whatever. Something is wrong. I got sober to live and enjoy life. I didn't get sober to be miserable, you know. And most of the time, I'm always happy and acting crazy. And I told some of the people, I'm going to some mountains in Tennessee, and I know there would not be any blacks there. And I was wrong. And I apologize to you two or three blacks that are here, you know. I apologize. I'm a Puerto Rican during the segregation. During the segregation, that was a bus driver from Detroit, and he was driving south, and Jesse got to the Mason-Dixon line. He stopped the bus, and he said, you know, they're having all the segregation on all those other buses, but we are not going to have no segregation on this bus. Maybe the other bus or whatever, but not this bus. Now, on this bus, we all going to be one color. We all are going to be green. Now, when we cross over that Mason-Dixon line, I want all light green in the front and all dark green in the back. No more jokes. I didn't come to Tennessee to tell a lot of jokes. But that's a time to laugh. That's a time to cry. That's a time to play. And that's a time to be serious. And I'm here tonight to share my experience, my strength and hope. Hoping and praying that something I may say may help somebody. You know, this is one of the greatest programs that was ever put on the face of this earth. I believe this is a God-sent program, and everything I say here tonight is my opinion. I believe we are God's chosen people. Now, I kind of compare the alcoholic like the Israelites, and I'm not going to get into the Bible much, but I just want to say this. You know, the Israelites weren't bonded for many years, you know, and they kept praying and asking God to deliver from bondage. And God worked through Moses to deliver the Israelites out of bondage. And God told the Israelites, if y'all be my people and I be y'all God, I'm going to take you to a land that's filled with milk and honey. But I'm going to give you the Ten Commandments to live by. And he gave them the Ten Commandments. And just like the alcoholics, some of them made it and some of them didn't, because some of them were hard-headed. They wanted to do things their way and they didn't make it. But the ones that did, they made it over into that great land that was filled with milk and honey. And I believe that God looked down on the alcoholic, you and I, and he saw us going through a lot of pain. He saw us going through a lot of suffering, and we didn't know what to do back then. There weren't in the treatment centers, so a lot of us were dying. And I believe he looked down and chose a drunken physician and a drunken stockbroker to start probably the greatest program that ever put on the face of this earth. Now, he could have chose Bob, he could have chose Milton, he could have chose me, he could have chose any of y'all if he wanted to. But he chose Dr. Bob and Bill W. to start the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he didn't give us no Ten Commandments, and I know y'all know why. I couldn't abide by no Ten Commandments when I came in there, and most of you all couldn't. I've committed adultery, I've stolen, I've done everything except kill and rape, and I may have done that. I just don't remember. So what did he give us? He gave us the 12 steps. They're growing steps. Anybody can work the 12 steps. He saw a man that would walk from alcohol, and he gave us the 12 steps. And no, he didn't say, you alcoholic, if y'all work the 12 steps and y'all do what I tell you to do, go to meet, read the big book, get your home group, etc., I'm going to take you to a land filled with milk and honey. No, he did not say that. But there are some promises that he promised us. And they're on page 83 and 84. And one of the promises is you're learning your freedom and you're learning your happiness. You're learning your freedom and you're learning your happiness. And I can honestly say tonight that I have learned a life that I would not trade for nobody's on the face of the earth, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I can go any place and be loved by you people. Why? Because you're just like me. You may be white, I may be black, you may be rich, I may be poor, but the bottom line, we all got that common denominator. We are alcoholics. And when you hurt, I hurt, you know? And when I hurt, you hurt. Because we all have been through a lot of pain and we all have been through a lot of suffering. Thank God for the program Alcoholics Anonymous. Now you see how people get up there and say, my name is so-and-so and I'm a great recovering alcoholic. And I be sitting back, I sick, you know, and I say, he's a lie. Nobody can be grateful for becoming an alcoholic. Nobody wants an incurable disease called alcoholism. Nobody wants a disease that's going to call you go to insane asylum penitentiary or you die. He got to be crazy. But then now I can get up here and say, my name is John Allison. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic, not grateful for all the pain and suffering that I put my family through and my friend through. But if I hadn't been an alcoholic, I probably wouldn't have found a God that I found 22 years ago. That took the desire for me to drink away and gave me serenity and gave me peace of mind and gave me love. He gave me the type of love that I can love another woman and not go to bed with him. And I can love another man and not be funny. That's the type of love that God gave me. If I hadn't been an alcoholic, I wouldn't have found a program like AA to teach me how to live sober one day at a time. Because, ladies and gentlemen, I don't have no drinking problem. I haven't drank in 22 years. I got a thinking problem. I got a living problem. My thinking and my living get messed up before I took that drink last time. And last but not least, I wouldn't have found friends in AA that loved me for just who I was. Not for who I used to be, not for who I could be, but ladies and gentlemen, you love me for just who I was. And I came in AA around 33 years ago. I yo-yoed around the program for 10 years, and Bob can tell you, in Louisville, there weren't about 12 or 13 blacks in the whole Louisville area, you know? And I came in this great program, and I didn't think you people wanted to be by with me, but thank God you came up to me and said, John, we love you, and we need you. We don't care if you're black. We don't care if you got those dirty clothes on. You love me for just who I was. And for that, I'm grateful. I'm so grateful. Alcoholism is an incurable disease. It's the four choices that I talked about. One, if you don't quit drinking, you end up in the insane asylum. Two, you go to penitentiary. And three, you'll die. You'll die. I do a lot of work in the correction facility. I go out to Central State, which is a mental institution, and they got those people out there with what they call organic brain syndrome, and I guess you all call them. They do, you know, those treatment center scholars, y'all know it, you know. And all it is a wet brain where alcohol have deteriorated their brain cells. And some of them walking up and down the aisle, urinating over in the corner and talking to themselves, well, alcohol have deteriorated their brain cells. And every time I go to penitentiary, I ask the question, how many of you were under the influence of alcohol or some other type of drug when you committed crime? And I know some of y'all have done that too, and about every one of them raised a hand. I was. Yeah. They did a survey, I don't know, a few years back, and they said 85% of the people there were in the penitentiary were under the influence of alcohol or some other type of drug when they committed crime. And last, you will die. Now, we all going to die. The only thing you have to do on this earth is die. Somebody say, you got to pay tax. You don't have to pay taxes. They'll lock your butt up, you know, but you don't have to pay no taxes. You'll die. 2 weeks ago, and Bob may have read this, some of you people in Louisville, they shot a 31-year-old guy, drove him over in down the underbridge and set the car on fire, burned him up. That was my nephew, 31 years old. About 3 months ago, I tried to get him to go into treatment. And he said, Uncle John, I'm going into treatment. Now he's dead. They burned him up. About 20 years ago, I sat at 2nd and Broadway at McDonald's in Louisville, Kentucky, and begged a 34-year-old lady, Tanya, go in treatment. And Tanya said, John, I can't go in treatment. Man, I just had a child. My boyfriend and I, we're doing better than we ever done in my whole life. I just enrolled in college. I can't go into treatment. 6 months later, she jumped off the I-65 bridge and died. So that was a 20 or 21, 22-year-old daughter that woke up Mother Day and didn't have no mother call and said, Mother, happy Mother Day, all due to alcohol. I had an aunt that her and her boyfriend got drunk one night, set the house on fire, burned her up, burned him up, and burned a little grandbaby up. Oh, due to alcohol, ladies and gentlemen, it's cunning, it's baffling, and it's powerful, and it's patient. It waits on you. It waited on me for 3 years. That was a guy named Bernie Schumann that I know these guys knew. I think it waited on him for 26 years. His wife died. He started back to drinking. A year later, he was dead. It would kill you. But thank God that's a fourth choice, and that's recovery. Now, I know we got all these treatment centers and we got all these psychologists and psychiatrists, you know, but the big book said, rarely have we seen a person fail who had thoroughly followed our path. You can stay sober in AA if you follow the AA path. Thank God for AA. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I don't think anybody wanted to be an alcoholic. I've been around this program a long time. I've never known anybody walk through a door and say, hey, I just want to be a member of this organization. Probably put him out, send him to a nut ward. He's crazy, you know. No, I didn't want to come here. You know, we don't want to be an alcoholic. I don't know if I drank myself into alcoholism or if I inherit alcoholism. I don't know, and I don't care. Hey, I got here. Thank God I got here. Thank God I got here. 10, 11 years old, I had my first drunk. My first drink and my first drunk probably. I don't remember. But we stole some whiskey from this guy and I got drunk and I almost died. My mother almost killed me. Now, I'm, you know, people close to my age remember the time, you know, when we got whoopings, you know, they go up on a big tree and grab the biggest limb they can and whoop you. And back in those days, they didn't have those child abuse places you could run to, you know. And if I would have told my mother, mother, I'm going to child abuse place, I wouldn't be here tonight. I'd be dead. But she whooped me and whooped me and whooped me, and I cried, and I said, Mama, I promise you, I'll never in my whole life drink any more alcohol, and I meant it deep down inside my heart. And I'm sure you all have made those great promises, but I did not know about a disease called alcoholism. And I lived with my grandmother. My mother and father had me, and she went one way, and he went another. And yes, I came from a broken home. But I lived with my grandmother, and I hated it because I wanted to be with my mother, and I wanted to be with my father. And I used to see other kids get out of school and they go play basketball, they go fishing, they do this and they do that. And I was raised on a farm, you know, in Camelville, Kentucky, and I had to cut back and haul wood and do this and do that. And I hated, hated my mother, hated my father, hated my grandmother, hated my grandfather. I couldn't wait to get out on my own, you know. And I used to see kids going to play ball and so forth. And I said, why couldn't I be like him? Why couldn't I be like Jim? Why couldn't I be like Joe? And all my life, I wanted to be someone else that I wasn't. And I never forget when I grew up and I started to see Bill Cosby. He was probably one of the black stars on TV. And I used to look at Bill Cosby. Why couldn't I be Bill Cosby? You know, God didn't make me to be Bill Cosby. And I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I wouldn't trade my life for Bill Cosby tonight. And I know Bill Cosby wouldn't trade his life for mine either, you know. At 16 years old, I drank some blackberry wine, almost died. Couldn't eat, couldn't sleep. Everything I eat would come right back up. I made the same promise to my grandmother that I made to my mother about 8 or 9 years earlier. Grandmother, I'll never my whole life drink any more alcohol. And again, I meant it. Did not know about a disease called alcoholism. Started in high school, played basketball, part of two of the greatest basketball players ever came out of Kentucky. Garfield Smith and Clem Haskins. Some of y'all remember Clem Haskins. Garfield left high school, went to Eastern University, played with the Boston Celtics, and he owned a big record company in Richmond. Clem Haskins left high school, went to Western, played with the Chicago Bulls, and he was head coach of Minnesota, and he just bought a $1 million home in Camelville. And I left Camelville, and I went to jail. I went to the county jail. But one afternoon, Clem and I, we were good friends. He said, John, man, it's a beautiful young lady that I'm really trying to talk to, man. Will you go help me? Put a good word in for me. And I went to talk to the lady, and the more I talked, the better looking she looked. And instead of putting a good word in for Clem, I put a good word in for me. And so how sick you out, and I was like, she chose me over Clem. Nah, just kidding. Too many of y'all up on this mountain. But I just believe she have laid in the bed a many nights and later looked up the sky and said, Lord, why did I make that big mistake? You know, because I put that woman through a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. But through that marriage came 5 beautiful children. To thank the God, and you all loves both of us. Loves both of us. My daughter called me at 4 o'clock today and said, Daddy, we barbecuing, and I'm going to save your plate, so when you get back tomorrow, you come over and pick your plate up. Came a beautiful marriage. But I moved to Louisville, and I came from a little country town, and my buddy back here, he's from Camelville, small town, 1962, I think like 6,400 people there, and it was a dry town, and the women wore their long dresses, you know, and I moved to Louisville, and Louisville, the women wore the short dresses, and liquor store in every corner, and man, I thought I would have died and gone to heaven, you know. And I partied and I partied and I partied, and I would stay out to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I would come home with women lipstick on my collars and phone numbers in my pocket, and my ex-wife would say something to me, and I'd push on out of the way. You don't tell me what to do. I'm the conductor of this ship. I'm the man of this house. And I'm not proud of some of the stuff I say, but it's happened. It got me here. But let me tell you one thing. What goes around comes around. It come back to you. But I continue to party, you know, and I would come in and you know, we had those verbal abuses, and as my alcoholism progressed, we started having the physical abuses. And let me tell you something, those country women will fight you. If you don't believe me, I can show you a scar up here, what she hit me with a skillet, and one over here, what she hit me with iron, and anything she could hand on, and we fought. And finally somebody told him, you don't have to fight him. There are some people downtown that will do your fighting for you. And I started going to jail. And it progressed, and it got worse, and it got worse. Got a job at GE, and everybody said, no, one of John drinks. He works at GE. Everybody drinks at GE. But GE, no different Ford, Harvester, or any other place. A lot of people drank, a lot of people didn't drink. But I fell in with the people who were just like me. That's why today I try to hang around the people who are just like me. I try to hang around with the alcoholics that's just clean and sober and trying to learn a new life, a new freedom, and a new happen. I don't go to the nightclub, hang around the people that's drinking and talking all that negative talk. And my alcoholism progressed, and it got worse and worse, and we kept having to knock down, drag out fights, and she had to go get money from her mother and my mother, and it was just a rat race. It was just a rat race. Alcoholism is a progressive disease, and I know you all know that. It gets worse and worse and worse. It's kind of like putting a ball up on a hill to fill with snow, or it may be a small ball. When you roll it down the hill, it become a great big ball. And around 1969 or 70, I think I crossed over the invisible line into what I call chronic alcoholism. And once you cross over the invisible line, you start going downhill, and it gets worse and worse and worse. Now, you're looking at a guy tonight that I ain't going to say is America, but God watched over. They say God watches over fools and drunk. I was both. I was a fool and I was a drunk. I'm blessed. I think everybody in here tonight should consider yourself being blessed, because if you're an alcoholic, we all have done some stuff. Well, we could be in an insane asylum, we could be in a penitentiary, or we could be dead. But God kept us here for a reason. He has a plan for all of us. It seemed like I've made a 180-degree turn for the worse. And I started having car wrecks and getting shot at and getting cut and stabbed. And I got a scar right in my back. One night the doctor said, if it had been a few more inches, John would have gotten in your lung, would have killed you. But I kept drinking. I woke up one morning, my car was all tore up. And I said, Lord, what happened? Who did I hit? I don't even remember who I hit. Any of y'all ever wake up in jail, you know, and you don't remember how you got there? You don't know what you did, you know? And they put in that line up, and they said, all of us look alike anyway, you know, someone, he did it. And I asked the correction officer, what am I charged with? And he said, John, they got you for public intoxication again. And I said, thank God. Thank God I didn't kill somebody. Thank God I didn't rape somebody. And I wake up, my wife's eyes be all black and blue, and I said, what happened to you? And she called me a few choice words. You know what happened. You beat me up last night. But I can tell y'all that, and y'all can identify with me, because some of y'all have been in a blackout. And you didn't know what happened. And it could have been you. It could have been me. Can y'all remember a guy waking up in the morning and said, officer, what am I charged with? And they said, you hit a school bus and you killed 28 people? That could have been either one of us, because we all have been in a blackout. But it didn't keep me from drinking. I continued to drink, and I continued to go my merry way, and it got worse, and it got worse. At 28 years old, I was introduced to my first treatment center of many, many, many treatment centers. At 28 years old, we weren't rich, but my wife worked at Philip Morris, and I worked at GE, and I had a little janitor service on the side, you know, and we had a nice home, we had nice cars, we had money in the bank. No, we weren't rich, but we had everything we needed and most of everything we wanted. From 28 to 38, at 38, I didn't have nothing. At 38, I was standing on the corner shaking, bumming dimes a quarter to get a pint of wine. And people used to ask me, John, what happened to you? And all I could say is I was hard-headed. I wanted to do things my way. And ladies and gentlemen, if you always do what you've always done, you're going to always get what you have always got. Think about that. Think about that. Thank God I was introduced to I went to a treatment center and I was introduced to AA, and I walked in a room like this and you people were smiling and playing like Ronam did and giving out the tickets and things. And I wanted what you had. I wanted to be like it, but I didn't want to surrender 100%. I wanted to stay sober, but I still want to go to my favorite tavern and drink my Coca-Cola's and Big Red. And it doesn't work like that. You got to make a 180-degree turn. So I continued to drink, and I continued to go to AA. And thank God, the only thing that I did right was kept coming back to you people. And if anybody go out and get drunk, man, don't be ashamed to come back. You ain't got nowhere else to go anyway. Where you going? Those people out there, they don't understand. They don't even want to be bothered with you. You ain't got no money to buy them something to drink. But I kept coming back to AA. You keep kicking a dog in the tail long enough, believe this, he's going to turn around and bite you, or you're going to leave and he's not going to come back. And that beautiful woman that I married when she was 15 years old, took away from Clem Haskins, she got tired up there, Bruce. And one night I went home and we fought, and next thing I know, I woke up, she was gone. She took all the furniture, the cat, the dog, and everything. I'd have nothing left, you know. And I checked in a treatment center. In that treatment center where I found out that that woman was suing me for a divorce, and I couldn't understand why. Why is she suing me for a divorce, you know? All I did was bust upside the head. All I did wasn't pay no house payment, wouldn't pay no light bill, wouldn't buy no food. Why is she suing me for a divorce? And then, you know, we get to pour me, pour me, pour me, pour me another drink. And that's what I did. I climbed out of a treatment center one night, about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I can remember going to a place and get me a pint of vodka. You know, get me a pint of vodka. Next thing I know was next morning. And I stayed all night somewhere. I don't know. Maybe one day I'll be speaking and somebody come up and say, well, you stayed all night with me, or else I took you here. I don't remember where I stayed all night. All I remember getting back to treatment center next morning, crying. You know how we do. Nobody loves me. Nobody cares, you know. And they put me out. They told me I was a bad influence on their alcohol program, you know. You just don't know. People see me today, and I'm always talking about loving people and trying to help people, but they just don't know. So this is a product of God, what God can do, AA, and people like you. The things I used to do, I just don't do no more. I got my wife filed for divorce while I was in that treatment center. I went back to work at GE. GE terminated me after 18 years of, 10 years of service. My ex-wife divorced me after 18 years of marriage, all in less than a month's time. And I just think I didn't care. I stayed drunk, and I sold blood, and I sold plasma, and I just didn't care about life. I've cold turkey. I'll be hot one minute. I'll be cold the next minute. And I would pray to a God I didn't know existed. Lord, please let me get over this drunk. Any of y'all ever bargain with God like that? Please let me get over this drunk. I promise you, I'll never take another drink, you know. And you lay down for 3 or 4 days and go through all that pain and suffering, and your sick mind kicks in. So, well, maybe I just drank 2 beers to calm me down, you know. You know the rest of the story, don't you? 2 led to 4 and 8 and 16, and all. It was just a rat race. Someone told me about a halfway house called a Talbot House, and I talked to Bill Wallace. He dead now. I can call his name, and he took me into the Talbot House, and Bill told me, John, you get out of what you put into anything. And I think he was Bob Buckmaster, I think. And I got involved in AA, chair meeting in the penitentiary, and did this and did that. And after about 3 months, my ex-wife and I, and going back together, we didn't remarry, but we went back together. And I didn't drink alcohol for 3 years. I didn't drink alcohol for 3 years. But that was the only thing I did right, was not drink alcohol. I did everything else the Big Book said not to do. Had to go to my favorite tavern and drink my Big Red and Coca-Cola and let everybody see me sober, you know. You know. Got in a fight in the AA meeting, asked somebody to go outside, wanted to fight him. You know. I'm 3 years sober. I was not sober. I was just dry. I didn't change. I didn't change. And somebody told me, John, you can't drink alcohol, but you can smoke marijuana. Marijuana won't bother you, you know. So I smoked me a joint. Come to AA meeting, Hanukkah, you know. People look at me, John, how you doing? I'm doing fine, man. Where am I, you know? Great. And I know that that's just substituting one drug for another. And I stopped making meetings. I didn't need the guys in the penitentiary. I didn't need to go to jail. I didn't need to do this. I didn't need to do that. And I got drunk. And if I leave here tonight and stop making meetings and stop speaking and stop helping alcoholics, I will get drunk. And I'm not going to take that chance. Because I would rather be dead to go back to the pain and suffering that I went through 22 years ago. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. That's not living. That's just existing. I know the day why I got drunk. Those 3 years, I stopped making meetings. And I stopped doing what I was supposed to in AA. I told you a while ago, I don't have a drinking problem today. I got a thinking problem. And most people that you talk to that go out and get drunk after 2, 3, 4, 5 years, most of them would say, I stopped making meetings. There's no cure for alcoholism. God put this poke on the earth for us. This is the cure. Rarely have I seen a person fail who had thoroughly followed our path. Not one halfway, not three-fourth way, but we got to follow AA path one whole way. I called a friend of mine in AA, and I got a job. I was working at Siegner Stereo, and I was a maintenance painter then. And one day I came in, I was shaking, and they said, we're going to hide all the liquor from John, all the whiskey. We had whiskey in all the lockers and everywhere you could think of. And they sick and I was talking about they're going to hide whiskey. I'm working at a stereo, and they're going to hide it from me, you know. And I walked on a line with all that whiskey flowing down the line, everybody checking the whiskey, and I just grabbed one of these big bottles. You don't have to check this one. I'm going to drink this one, you know. And next thing I know, the person had packed me out on the back, and he sat down and told me all the things I did. And I cried, and he cried, and then he fired me, you know. And I called my sponsor, and he said, John, you've been in every treatment center in Louisville, and I have. He said, John, there's a treatment center in LaGrange that's about 20 miles up the road. Maybe they can help you. But let me tell you something. We probably got some counselor here, and we probably got some psychiatrists here. No treatment center can get you sober. And I don't want to bust your bubble, but none of them get you sober. They can dry you out, and they can give you the tools. But you got to apply those tools in your everyday life. None of them. I've been to just about everyone in Louisville and got drunk after every one of them. It wasn't a treatment center fault. It was my fault. I didn't follow what they told me to do. But God works in mysterious ways. And I met a counselor, a little bit of short lady named Avalon, one of the sweetest ladies I've ever met in my whole life. And Avalon was my counselor. And one day she grabbed me and come in here, jack me in the room. I thought she was going to kill me, you know. And she said, John, you're a nice guy. You got a nice personality. You've been yo-yoing around this program for years. You got a disease called alcoholism. You take away the alcohol, you still got the isms. And those are the things you got to work on every day. And John, you got to get rid of your resentments and your envy and your jealousy. And John, you got to love people. You got to love everybody. You got to love white people, black people, poor people, rich people, old people, young people. You got to love them. And she said, John, if you ever get your spiritual part of the program, you can love people like you've never loved before. But I didn't know what she was talking about. She told me about the ABCs in the big book. I thought she was talking about the ABCs you learn when you go to school, you know. She told me to go back to this halfway house called the Talbot House. But I went back home to a woman that would tell me, John, I don't love you no more. I don't want you no more. I don't care if you stay sober the rest of your life. I still won't love you. I was going to make this woman love me. Any of y'all have been in no relationship where it's not working, but we're just going to make it work, you know? I see some heads shaking, yes. And we get sick. We get sick. And I was going to try to make that marriage work. And I can remember a time when I used to come in 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning with women lipstick on my collars and phone number in pocket. She started coming in 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And when the shoe's on the other foot, doesn't fit too well, does it? And the first thing I said, I'm going to kill her. Then think about when I did, but when she did, I was going to kill her. And one night I went riding and I picked this guy up and we went to a liquor store, and it started the worst drunk that I've ever been on, and I hope and pray to God it's my last drunk. I'll never forget this drunk. I stayed drunk all night, went to work the next morning. I worked at Philip Morris, worked 2 hours, and walked off the job. Got locked up, got out the next day, went home, found my wife had a court order to get me out of the house, and I didn't have no home. So I ran the streets of Louisville like a wild man. I would ask people for money and they wouldn't give me no money. And I talk about the mothers and the fathers and the sisters and brothers. I'm blessed to be alive. I'm blessed to be alive. One day I called my ex-wife and I don't know where I got a butcher knife from. And I don't remember a whole lot about this, but I remember going over to her house and she coming to the front door and we started hooping and hollering and arguing one another. And I reached my back pocket and I cut across the jaw with a butcher knife. I'm not proud of that. If Milton and Bob and Roe, if they thought I was that person, that type of person today, I wouldn't be here. They would not let me be here. But I'm not that type of person today. But give me a drink of alcohol, and I don't know what I might do. And don't ever say what you want to do. I used to hear people say, oh, I never do that. And I say, if you're an alcoholic and you take a drink of alcohol, you don't know what you may do, because alcohol takes over, and alcohol tell you do this, and alcohol tell you do that. And I heard police cars coming, and I ran. And I was just crazy. And I ran. I ran from the police for 2 months. And those were the most miserable 2 months of my whole life. Every time I see a police car, I just get real scared. And every time I go to bed at night, I could picture myself cutting that woman with that butcher knife, and I picture it to be a lot worse than what it really was. If she walked in the door right now, you had to get real close to it. It's just a little bit of scar. It's amazing. God healed that woman. I stayed drunk around the clock. I worked maybe about 3 or 4 days, and the rest of the time I walked up down the streets of Louisville and I burned dimes and quarters. I've drank that Little Richard. I've drank that MD-2020. This guy had 3 bottles of rubbing alcohol in the house, and I drank those 3 bottles of rubbing alcohol in about a week's time and chased it with great pop. I've slept in a mission. I've slept in abandoned cars. I've slept in parks. You know, I've been there. I pray to God every day, Lord, please help me to be the man that you want me to be, because I want to go to heaven. I've had hell on this earth. I've been through some pain. I've been through some suffering, and I don't want to go back to that. July the 4th, 1980, I thank God. I say, okay, you had enough, John. I'm going to show you a new life. I'm going to show you a new freedom, and I'm going to show you a new happiness. They took away my independence on July the 4th, 1980. They locked me up. They're the best thing that ever happened to me, because I don't think I'd be here tonight. I think I would have been dead. I was suffering malnutrition. I went in DTs in jail. I saw snakes crawling around my throat and looked like the more I pull off, the more will come. I heard music. I saw all these men coming and trying to fight me, you know. And I was in a cell with three murderers. And they said that a bit of good in the worst of us, and that'll get a bad in the best of us. And those guys had compassion for me. And you know, I'd be over out pulling those snakes off, and they said, look at him, man, he's crazy. You know, they done kill people. They think I'm crazy, you know. But they would help me to the restroom, and they would help me take a shower, and they would feed me because I'd be shaking. They would hold my hand and feed me, you know, like I was a little bit of baby. And about 30 days, my eyes got real yellow, and they diagnosed me having hepatitis, and they thought it was contagious, and they put me in a little cell by myself, and I couldn't have no visitors, and I couldn't look at TV, and I couldn't use the telephone. And the only thing I had to look forward to those slide those 3 meals into me today, and they would laugh at me, get away from happy, and it hurt. And all I could do was cry and pray and cry and pray. All of my life, I believe in God, and then I didn't believe in God. Because I had that concept, I got to see it to believe it. I can't believe in something I can't see. And I can remember one night a guy came up to me after I spoke, and he said, John, can you see the wind? And I said, no, I can't see it, you know? And he said, but you can feel it, can't you? And I said, yes. And he said, John, if you go outside and look up at those trees, you see those leaves moving, you know the wind is doing that, don't you? And I said, yes. And he said, that's the way God is. You don't see God. Only one saw God was Oral Roberts when he won that $5 million, but although you don't see God. We feel him. We feel him on the inside. We see God through other people. That love that you all have shown for one another this weekend, that's God working through you. Because all the other thing God is, he's omnipotent. He's everything. The most significant thing is he's love. He loved you and he loved me. And he didn't say, I love the black man, I love the white man, I love the rich man. But he loves us all. Because a few weeks ago on a Friday, his son died for us. That's love. That's love. But I would cry and I would pray and I would cry and I would pray. And I reminisce back in my life and I say, if I got out of jail, I don't have a job. I don't have a wife. I don't know where my children are. I'm 38 years old and I'm a non-entity. I don't have nothing. And one day I started crying and I was just boo-hooing and I got a sheet and I was trying to tie a sheet around my throat. I wanted to take the easiest, softer way out. But God knew that one day I was going to be speaking in Mount Eagle, Tennessee. He wasn't ready for me to die. He had other plans for me. And some correction officer came in and they rushed in and they took the sheet away from me. And they begged me not to commit suicide. They gave me some books to read and they gave me a Bible to read. And they told me, John, there's a better life. Just be patient. And I read that Bible and I read that book and I cried and I prayed and I said, God, if you are there, I don't care if I go to penitentiary. I don't care if I never have a mature thing my whole life. I just want to live and I just want to live sober. And ladies and gentlemen, God doesn't come when you want it, but he comes. He comes. Just be patient. I think he worked through a Commonwealth detective. I was on a $10,000 cash bond. Not my family had that type of money. I'm sure they wouldn't put it up for me anyway. But there was a Commonwealth detective named Jim Howard who got me out of jail and took me to the Talbot House. September 29th, 1980, he said, John, I talked to the jurors, and jurors said before he would let you out of jail, I had to find you a place to stay. So I've gone and talked to Bill Wallace at the Talbot House, and we got you a bed there. And I never forget, this guy had a new car and a new suit on, you know, and I'm sitting over there, you know, and tears run down my eyes. And I said, man, I hope one day I'll be able to repay you. And he said, John, you can stay sober and help another suffering alcoholic. That's love. You don't find no kind of people walking up down the street in Mount Eagle or Louisville or Chattanooga, but they are here in AA. He didn't say, John, give me $10 a month like some of your counselors want to, you know. Stay sober and help another suffering alcoholic. In other words, John, save your own life. And in doing so, try to help another alcoholic save our lives and learn new freedom and learn new happiness. And I moved in this halfway house. No clothes, no job, no family, no nothing. The first pair of pants I wore came from Goodwill. I see guys come in now with new cars and suits. I didn't even have a bicycle when I came in. I didn't even have a bicycle. But I surrendered, and I went to AA morning and night. And all the other time, I would go in treatment center, and I'd get out, and I'd try to get my wife back and try to get a job back. This time, I concentrated on staying sober, and everything just kind of fell in place. And I remember my sponsor called me and said, I'm going to take you to AA meeting. I said, Don, I can't go to AA meeting. I got these old dirty clothes on. And he said, John, you're not going to win no darn booty contest. You're going to try to stay sober. And I came to you people. And after the meeting was over, I didn't think you people want to be bothering me. And I settled on the side, and I was going to rush out the door, but you grabbed me. You told me to keep coming back. Thank God you did. You told me you loved me. If you had told me what I better do, I would have told you what you better do, and I went out and drank myself to death. But you didn't. And I thank God for that. A, it's a mental, it's a physical, and it's a spiritual disease. And without all three of them, you miss out on the most beautiful part of the program, that is this guy that Evalon used to tell me about. I didn't know existed. One night I was walking up the street, going to get a pack of cigarettes. I was smoking then. And this guy came into my life, and I heard Debbie talk last night. And when he came into my life, it seemed like a lot of things started running through my body. And I said, oh, God. And I started laughing. I started crying. I started praying all at the same time. And it seemed like for about 30 seconds, just a calmness came over. And for the first time in my life, I said to myself, I can stay sober. I don't have to drink alcohol. You know, don't have to drink alcohol. And I looked around, tried to see something, and I couldn't see anything, you know. And I can remember going and getting those cigarettes, you know, and tears to run down my eyes, you know. And I would laugh, and the woman handed me those cigarettes, and she act like, they, hey, you know, that MD-2020 don't warp his brain cell, you know, he's crazy. But I had found a God that I didn't know existed. I have not seen God. I don't know what God is, but nobody can tell me about God because I know him for myself. You can tell me about the Bible. You can tell me things about the big book, but I know God. He's there. And from that day up until the night, I have not had the desire to drink. I used to wonder, when I get that desire, would I be somewhere I can call somebody, talk to somebody? I don't worry about that now. I had to just go on and live and do what God wants me to do. AA didn't get me sober. All the treatment center that I went through didn't get me sober. God got me sober. God took the desire for me to drink away. AA teaching me how to live sober one day at a time. If you don't believe me, when you leave here tonight, get your big book and read the ABCs that Evelyn used to try to instill in my life. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could ever leave the alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he was up. Not Betty Ford Clinic, not a treatment center in Tennessee, not a treatment center in Louisville, but God could and would if he was up. It's there. It's there. And he gave me serenity. And he gave me peace of mind. And I stayed in that halfway house for 6 months. They put me out of a halfway house, doing great. You know, Bill Wallace said, John, you got to grow up. You know, and he told me I had to leave. I've probably still been there 22 years later. Time you grow up. But let me tell you how God works. That was a little house right across the street from the Talbot House. Because God knew I needed the Talbot House. He knew I needed the guys in Talbot House. That was a little house right across the street that I moved in. You know, and I didn't have no radio, and I didn't have no TV, and every time it rained, I had to move my bed because of the rain on me. And if the wind had to blow that house fair much, I've been landing out in the gutter, you know. But I was happy, and I moved right across the street from the Talbot House, and I was happy. And this guy used to come over, and I'd be singing and enjoying life. And Junior said, John, I just heard what I heard what you got. And I said, Junior, I didn't get what I got, but just going to Sunday school every Sunday morning. I've been through some pain. I have cried so hard, I feel like my eyes gonna fall out of socket. I have hurt so much inside, I feel like my heart gonna pound out of my body. You wake up in a mission on a Christmas day and you wanna be with your children so bad, but you don't know where they are because of alcohol. It hurts. It hurts. That was a crucifixion before it was a resurrection. Remember that. We got to go through the pain. We don't have to be miserable. We create our own miserable trying to make things happen, but we have to go through the pain. The last 22 years has been the best year of my life. Yeah, I have to go through some pain. We still have to go through some pain. You know, God didn't give us this great program on a silver platter and say everything's going to be blazing roses. But thank God I got people that I can talk to, and I can give him some, and I can give him some, I can give her some, and then I won't have all this stuff to carry on by myself. Thank God for the people that love me. That woman that I cut with a butcher knife for about 8 or 9 years, we couldn't talk. She would call me at home. She'd call me at work and say, you no good, you know what, you know. And I said, you're another one, you know. And we went back and forth like this for years. You cut me with a butcher knife, you start that family, you no good, you're another one. And one day she called me at work and said, John, this is Nancy. And I was getting ready to call another one. But she said, John, all my life, ever since we've been divorced, I've hated you. You destroyed that marriage. You destroyed that family. You did this. You did that. John, I'm calling you today to let you know that I don't hate you no more. I'm trying to get my life back together. And John, I don't hate you. I love you, and I'm proud of the work that you're doing. And I cried like a baby. I cried like today. Today we're friends. We took our little grandkid to the parade the other night. You know, my daughter, when I cut her mother with a butcher knife, I was hiding from the police, and I called over house one day, and my daughter said, Daddy, get out of my life. I hate you. I don't ever want to see you no more. You cut mama. The doctor said if Knight had been in the Lord, it would cut her throat, and you would have killed her, and I don't ever see you no more. And I walked her down the aisle when she got married a few years ago, and tears were running down my eyes, and everybody thought I was crying because I would give my daughter away, but that wasn't the reason why I was crying. I was crying because I can remember times she said, Daddy, I hate you. I don't ever see you no more. And today she called me and said, Daddy, when you get back home tomorrow, I'm going to have a plate ready for me. She loves me. I got a great relationship with all my children. Every Christmas, every Thanksgiving, every holiday, like Derby, if I had been out of day, we all get together and we eat. And every Christmas and every Thanksgiving, we'll hold hands and everybody will say what they're grateful for. And about 4 years ago, we were holding hands, and everybody said they're grateful for that, this and great faith for that. And my little 7-year-old grandson said, I'm just grateful that my grandfather here to eat with us today. You see, it's not the great big things that mean so much. It's the little bit of things that mean so much. And I owe it all to God, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and people like y'all. That halfway house that I moved, that I lived in, I moved out, and I was a union painter, and I was making good money, and I used to be painting the walls, and God worked mysterious ways, and I used to pray to God, please give me a job where I can spend all my time trying to help other alcoholics. Watch what you pray for, you know. And I got a job, and I had to take an $8,000 year cut in pay, and everybody said, you're crazy, that wine done warped the brain cell. But I work with people that are on probation, parole, had alcohol and drug problem, but God was preparing me for that job. And I remember Bob asked me about a year before I got that job, Tabitha, I was about getting that job, and I didn't care nothing about the job, to be honest. I was happy just working with alcohol and probation, parole. And they elected me on the board of directors, and 3 years later, they elected me the president of the board of directors. And Bob was on the committee to hire me as executive director of his house. So now I'm the director of the same house that I moved in 22 years ago, the house that I didn't want to leave, so I haven't left, and I'm going back as a director. UPS give out $100,000 grant every year, and I was out there speaking one morning, and the guy told me about this $100,000 grant, and I applied for it, and I'm telling you how God worked, not me, how God worked. We beat out Habitat for Humanity by 2 votes to get that $100,000 grant. A little organization like us, it had to be God wanted us to do it. So we bought another house. I went home one night and I played my answer machine, and the mayor of Louisville was on my answer machine. And he said, John, this is Dave Armstrong. He said, hey, I just want to, now call me in my office next morning. And I said, oh Lord, what have I done now? You know, and he said, I want to do something. That detective that got me out of jail was his chief detective when he was attorney general, and he gave us some money to buy another house. You know, about 6 months ago, all the guys chipped in and put $5 piece up and gave me a plaque telling me that they love me and the love that I've shown for them. And it's been a great run, and I hope and pray that God continue to bless me. And God can work through me and try to help a lot of other suffering alcoholics. I won all kind of awards in 1992. I won the Community Service Award. That's the award that give out to the person who I think have done the greatest work in the whole community. I won an award from the governor. I won an award from the mayor. And I won an award from the county judge. But the greatest award of all was when I found God, when I found AA, and when I found new people. I just hope and pray that you will continue to love me, and I will continue to love you, and we all can grow together in this great program, Alcoholics Anonymous. I wish you peace, I wish you love, and I wish you togetherness. Thank you very much.